This is Radio Superior 1943, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1943. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time and hear this recreation of radio as it may have sounded in 1943. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lakes, station KUWS in Superior, Wisconsin. It's 6 o'clock Central Wartime, Saturday, December 25th, 1943. And this is Jack McKenna saying a careless word, a needless loss, and of course, Merry Christmas. Lou Martin has the war news from the Pacific and Europe. And then we'll have the best Christmas music. We have a treat for you folks. The Fair and Square kids will be in with their Christmas stories, and maybe we can coax them into singing a Christmas carol. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by First National Bank of Superior in its 55th Christmas of Business. Merry Christmas, Lou. Can you believe this is our third Christmas since Pearl Harbor?
Things are so quiet this Christmas.
Except for folks, of course, going to church last night. The streets have been empty.
So many men and women are overseas. The U.S. Maritime Commission has ordered a rare 2 days off in a row for all shipyards. And then it's back to work for a 6-day work week.
Old Admiral Vickery is cutting everyone some slack this Christmas. Always, Lou, it's nice to say, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Jack, and Merry Christmas, one and all. The CIO, United Auto Workers of America, has called a strike at its steel plants around the nation. As contracts ran out at midnight last night, 40,000 workers in 4 Ohio steel mills walked off the job, as did workers at 210 other steel manufacturing mills around the country. That would affect 350,000 workers. CIO President Philip Murray blames the War Labor Board for not giving retroactive pay once a new contract is reached. Steelworkers want a 17-cent an hour raise. The strike won't be felt until Monday because of the holiday, and it's possible that some agreements could be reached to avert crippling national defense industries. The long effort to isolate the powerful Japanese base on Rabaul, New Britain, in the South Pacific, took a large step forward. United States Marines have made a second landing and have 2 beachheads at Cape Gloucester. We begin our World Shortwave Radio Roundup with war correspondent Daryl Berrigan in New Guinea.
This is Advanced Allied Headquarters, New Guinea calling. Daryl Berrigan reporting. Today, United States Marines swarmed in 2 simultaneous landings at Cape Gloucester on the western tip of New Britain. This gives the Leathernecks a second invasion front on Japan's remaining island stronghold in the Southwest Pacific. The landings apparently took the enemy by surprise. General Douglas MacArthur reports that within 2 hours, the beachheads were fully established without the loss of any Marines. That doesn't mean there hasn't been heavy fighting. There has. Heavy naval and air bombardment plus aerial fighting have cost the NIPS 36 bombers and 25 fighter planes in a desperate attempt to stem the invasion tide. 7 American planes have been lost, along with 1 ship sunk and 3 others damaged. These men are veterans of Guadalcanal. A dispatch just handed me from the headquarters of Invasion Commander General William Rupertus indicates Marines are now pushing on through the harsh jungles of New Britain. The Allies continue to extend its mastery of the Bismarck Sea with the ultimate aim of cutting off the supply lines to Rabaul from the Central Pacific Jap stronghold in truck. General MacArthur says this will put the Admiralty Islands within range of Allied land-based bombers as the march toward the Philippines and Japan continues. In New Guinea, this is Daryl Berrigan calling Soviet Russia. Come in, Eddie Gilmore in Moscow.
Moscow here, Eddie Gilmore reporting. There is no holiday mood on this Christmas of 1943. There is deprivation and a somber tone. Even so, people here remain optimistic the Nazi foe will be defeated this year. A fierce battle is raging near Kiev. The Red Army continues its drive with the 1st Baltic Army led by General Ivan Bagramian. This month, the 1st Baltic Army has liberated 60 villages, hoping ultimately to free Kiev after more than 2 years of Nazi control. This fight comes against some of the strongest defenses of the German army. In fact, 2,500 Nazi troops have been counted dead, while a booty of 15 tanks and 38 large guns have been captured. The hope among Muscovites is this will be the last Christmas with Nazi boots on Soviet soil. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore, calling Allied headquarters in Algiers. Come in, Wes Gallagher.
This is Algiers, North Africa. Wes Gallagher at Allied HQ. Some dramatic news regarding a second European front has been disclosed by the new commander of the main European force. General Dwight D. Eisenhower declared flatly and without qualification that the European war will be won in 1944. General Eisenhower made the announcement at his farewell press conference after successfully directing the American landings on North Africa at Casablanca and Algiers 14 months ago. He's leaving for Britain to direct the invasion of Hitler's fortress Europe from either the west or the north. Asked to assess the Allied war in 1943, the general said in 1942, the Axis powers were at the gates of Cairo, Malta hung by a thread, and submarine warfare threatened to starve England. 1943 saw the victory in North Africa and the surrender of Italy with its huge fleet. Meanwhile, two British officers have been appointed as aides to General Eisenhower. Air Chief Marshal Sir Arthur Tedder will have the air command, while Admiral Sir Bertram Holm Ramsay, known for his expertise on amphibious landings, will command the sea actions. In Algiers, this is Wes Gallagher reporting.
It appears the Yanks will handle the bulk of the invasion in Europe. Colorado Senator Johnson, a member of the Military Affairs Committee, says that 73% of the attack forces will be American, with Great Britain and Canada making up the other 27%. Japanese Premier Hideki Tojo admitted to the Japanese Diet that there have been minor changes in certain sectors of the Pacific, but Mr. Tojo says the changes are merely consolidation of the Nipponese Army and Navy bases. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:07. Jack McKenna has these holiday greetings from local merchants.
Thank you, Lou. By buying and giving war bonds, you help shorten the war. You help save the lives of clean, decent Americans, that more of them may come back to enjoy Christmas as Christmas should be. Think about this when you are deciding what to give to those you hold most dear during the coming year. Think about it and give war bonds whenever giving gifts of any kind, be it a birthday, an anniversary, or any special occasion. For peace on earth, buy war bonds. So say First National Bank, Benson Electric Company, Superior Elks Club, Superior Waterlight, and Power Company.
The husband of a Superior woman is a prisoner of war. Mrs. Lawrence Wolfe received word from the War Department that her husband, Army Air Corps Sergeant Lawrence Wolfe, was shot down over Austria and is now in German hands. Mrs. Wolfe is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. John Esterholm of Weeks Avenue in Superior. The Riverside Yards of Butler Shipping in far western Duluth has been awarded the M Pennant from the War Production Board. With the christening Friday of the SS Dale Frank, the yard broke its own record by launching the Dale 23 days after laying its keel. Merit pins will be sent from Washington, D.C. for each of the 3,000 Butler Shipyard Riverside employees. Butler also has a shipyard in Superior. Army Air Corps ace Richard Bong of Poplar continues his 60-day furlough, spending a busy Christmas with his brothers and sisters. Later this week, Captain Bong will travel to Madison to have lunch with Governor Walter Goodland. Governor Goodland says that he wants to meet the war hero. Mothers have spoken loud and clear. The War Production Board has placed diapers on the list of items vital for the war effort. This means that diaper makers now have priority over other non-essential industries for hiring people. Also added to the list, along with diapers, are nightgowns, snowsuits, crib blankets, and play togs for children under six. For the first time since he was elected president in 1932, President Roosevelt is spending Christmas at his family home in Hyde Park, New York. Like millions of other Americans, the president's home is littered with gifts and wrappings for his many children and grandchildren. This is the largest family gathering for FDR since the war began. He'll be just another grandfather, though. He'll carve the Christmas turkey with chestnut dressing, and then, as he does every year, he'll read Dickens' Christmas Carol aloud to the family. How about that, Jack?
I'd like to get his recipe for chestnut dressing.
Well, since I doubt that it comes in a can, it'd probably be a waste of your time.
Here, here. I get the raspberries even on Christmas. Thanks, Lou Martin. Still the jolliest newsman this side of the North Pole. Now, friends, our forecast for this Saturday, December 25th, 1943. Slightly colder with light snow on this very white Christmas here at the head of the lakes. Look for a low tonight at 5 above with a high tomorrow at 22 degrees. Speaking of white Christmas, there's last year's big hit by Bing Crosby with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra to start us off tonight. Merry Christmas on the Martin and McKenna Show.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Music of John Scott Trotter and his orchestra with the singing of Dear Bingle, Bing Crosby, and that's White Christmas. Boy, it sure is quiet this year, Lou.
There have been many sacrifices this year. Many local men lost in battle, wounded, or held prisoner. Three Christmases at war makes it a solemn occasion.
Hopefully, as Ike says, it'll be the last war Christmas.
We've heard that we're fighting this war for our children. So today's show, we're going to talk about kids.
Even have the fair and square kids in with Uncle Bob. I hope they haven't eaten much sugar today. They're good kids, though, but they can get kind of rammy after too many sweets.
Which is why I wish that you'd refrain from putting three sugar lumps in your coffee. Anyway, Superior has a Christmas baby. Mr. and Mrs. Ivan and Irene Itich welcomed a son into this world at St. Joseph's Hospital. Mother and child are doing fine.
I've got another Christmas baby story. The Motion Picture Herald says Betty Grable is not only the number one pinup girl among servicemen, but she's also the number one box office draw in 1943.
There are more important things going on than what you read in those Hollywood gossip magazines.
But, Lou, this is important. The only other women to lead that list have been Shirley Temple and Marie Dressler, of your age. And neither of them would make good pin-up girls.
Again, address your complaints care of Jack McKenna, KUWS Radio.
Next on the list of top movie draws are Bob Hope, Abbott and Costello, Bing Crosby, Gary Cooper, Greer Garson, bad guy Humphrey Bogart, Mickey Rooney, James Cagney, and Clark Gable. And Clark Gable didn't even make a movie this year.
Shall we say he's gone with the wind. Flying missions for Uncle Sam.
In an effort to intercept any more news humor, let's listen to this old recording of A Majestic Number, sung by Paul Robeson. Let's enjoy Mary Had a Baby on the Martin and McKenna Show on Station KUWN. For this somber Christmas of 1943, that's Paul Robeson with Lawrence Brown on the piano. Recorded in 1931, that's Mary Had a Baby on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Let's welcome Harriet Feurig with some community Christmas tidings. And thank you for the wonderful scarf that you knitted.
Yeah, thanks. I love mine. Sorry I didn't knit you anything.
That would have been a real interesting scarf, seeing as how you don't knit.
Well, I tried once, but I kept injuring myself.
Those needles can get pretty tricky.
And sharp.
We've been talking about kids this Christmas, and it certainly answers the question of why we fight. But so many local men in the service have been away so long, and they have never seen their sons or daughters. Imagine. In Guadalcanal, Private George Zanuzowski will be thinking of the twins he's never seen. George Timothy and Suzanne Harriet turned 6 months old this month. His wife Harriet sends him pictures every month.
Something about women named Harriet. They're all so compassionate.
And people named Lou are so sappy.
Jack. Ensign Charles Linder is in the Aleutians. He has yet to see his daughter, Mary Ellen, who was born November 1st. Somewhere in the South Pacific, Seaman W.G. Joe Thompson wishes he could be home with his wife, the former Miss Margaret Fagerlin. Besides giving his wife a big old kiss, he could say hello to his daughter, Mary Jo, who turned 9 months old in December 15th.
So it'd be safe to say that Seaman Thompson was last home on leave 18 months ago?
Jack?
Behave yourself.
Little Margaret Jo's daddy is a pharmacist mate, second class in the Navy. And Mary Arthur Cirilli, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Cirilli, will turn 1 year old next February. She lives with her mother and grandfather, A.D. Wheeldon, in Superior. Private Cirilli is with the Armed Forces at Camp Lee, Virginia. On this Christmas Day, we wish all of the absent fathers Godspeed and safe return home to their loved ones, the ones they're fighting for.
Very stirring indeed. You're always so thorough.
One of these days, I'd like you to think of me as more than thorough, Lewis.
Oh, boy, that's sweet talk for a newsman. Thanks, Harriet. I even got two Jacks out of the deal. Stand by. The Fair and Square kids are next with Uncle Jack, Uncle Bob. Let's keep in that festive mood of the holiday, folks. From 1934, then, here's a great one by Lou Stone and his band with Alan Kane singing Winter Wonderland on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made walking in a winter wonderland.
Boys and girls, that's fun music. But all Christmas music is fun, isn't it?
I'd like to welcome Uncle Bob and the Fair and Square kids.
Hi, Uncle Bob. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, boys and girls. That means all my Fair and Square kids out in Radio Land, too. You know, Uncle Bob can see you, even if you can't see me. Uncle Bob knows this may be a scary time for boys and girls because of those bad people across the oceans. But remember now, you are safe and sound in the good old U.S. of A. So celebrate Christmas. We're going to do that right now.
Joining us are Mavis Rasmussen of Rice Lake and Guest of Gordon, Edwin Erickson of Herbster, and Lorraine Armbruster of Iron River.
I know that. I know all my Fair and Square kids. I also know Mary Alice Durand of Webster is spending the holidays in bed. Can you believe that, boys and girls?
How can that be? I wonder why.
That's no fun.
Mary Alice is in bed because she has the chicken pox. But she says she's having a fun Christmas anyway. Get well soon, Mary Alice.
And thanks for not coming by the studio with the chicken pox.
I got sick at the school Christmas party. I ate too much candy, and then it all came back up.
Yes, thank you, Edwin. Uncle Bob gets queasy when he thinks of things that come back up. Now, Edwin, why don't you go first? You have a story called A Nice Christmas.
It was Christmas Eve when the Grayson kids, Betty and Bob, went to see their neighbors, the Carson twins. They carried a basket of Christmas goodies and some presents. It's been a hard time for Jack and Mary Carson ever since their dad was reported as missing in action overseas. But tonight, as Bob and Betty reached the Carson porch, they were met by Jack and Mary. The twins could hardly speak. They were so excited. "I bet you can't guess what happened today," said Jack. When they rushed into the house, Miss Carson showed them the letter she had just received from the War Department. It read, "Your husband, although he was reported missing in action, is now safe at one of our bases. Details later. We're sure happy tonight," said Miss Carson. The Christmas basket had been forgotten in all the excitement, but now Betty and Bob presented it. The twins cried with delight. "Gee, but we are having fun. I guess this is the nicest Christmas we ever had. Isn't it, Mom?" The end.
Oh, my goodness. That sure was a good story, Edwin Erickson. What a happy Christmas for them.
Want to hear the story of the Christmas party where I got sick now?
Edwin's a pretty versatile storyteller with a real wide range.
Thank you, Edwin Erickson of Herbster. Say, boys and girls, would you like to hear a poem by Mavis Rasmussen of Rice Lake? Sure you would.
I worked hard making sure it all rhymes, Uncle Bob. It's called Patriotic Christmas. This will be a patriotic Christmas. There won't be many pretty toys. Instead, Santa is bringing war stamps to good little girls and boys. This will be a patriotic Christmas. There will be some empty places at the table, but still our boys will write home and say, "By all the war bonds you are able." This will be a patriotic Christmas, but it will be Christmas anyway. So let us do all we can to make it a happy day.
Oh, that's so right. We have to make the best of things these days. And Uncle Bob knows the fair and square kids are all patriotic. Who wants to go next?
Santa brought me some crayons for Christmas, Uncle Bob. Here, I colored a picture for you.
Why, isn't that nice, Anne? This is little Anne Guest of Gordon. It's a purple and green snowman. How creative.
Interesting snow in her backyard.
What's your poem about, Anne?
It's called Our Christmas 1943. They say this year we can't have any luxury, but that won't bother us at all. If we can get a tree that's straight and tall, that we can decorate with stars and balls, and shimmering tinsel icicles and pretty angel dolls. Presents underneath the tree we'll place on cotton snow, while on the mantle all the socks are hanging in a row. A holly wreath with bells and balls hangs in the window glass. It's waiting now to say hello when Santa Claus goes past. Through the softly drifting snow, the voices clear and sweet of the carolers' joyous Christmas songs float in from the street. And so to bed with pleasant dreams, till the tree will fast be shown, and we'll all say Merry Christmas, Santa's been here on the morn.
Uncle Bob loves tinsel icicles and pretty angel dolls. It sounds like you had a wonderful Christmas, Anne Guest of Gordon.
Christmas always makes Uncle Bob a little emotional.
I'm not really emotional. I just have a runny nose.
It's okay, Uncle Bob. My mom says men shouldn't be afraid to cry.
Yeah, don't be afraid to show your sensitive side, Uncle Bob.
Uncle Bob bets Loomis Martin on the coal in his stocking that he'll be pulling out his hanky for Lorraine's next story. Are you ready, Lorraine, Arm Booster of Iron River?
This is so neat, Uncle Bob. I've always wanted to be on the radio. My story is called A Soldier's Christmas. Dear Sis,
I received your Christmas gift the day before Christmas, and I can't tell you how glad I was to get it. I got Mom's and Mrs. Wilson's on Christmas Day. And, oh, I received lots of gifts from relatives, neighbors, and school pals. I was having the time of my life opening Christmas packages when I noticed a private sitting in a corner watching the rest of us. Right away, I knew he was the fellow who liked to write letters but never received any mail. I rewrapped my gift, sis, put this rookie's address on it, and mailed it. Honestly, sis, the joy of seeing his face light up when he heard his name called at mail time for a Christmas parcel was well worth the price of parting with your gift. So, sis, don't be surprised to get a letter from Private Joe Andrews, because I put your return address on the package. He's a swell guy, and I know you'd like him. For once, Joe will finally get someone to answer one of his letters. Signed, Your Soldier Brother Johnny.
That was very nice, Lorraine. Very, very nice.
Yes, Lorraine, that was very thoughtful. I can't think of a better way to end our quiet Christmas show, except for one thing. You know what that is, boys and girls?
Yes, Uncle Bob. Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm going to say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you'll bring to me, tell me if you can. When the clock is striking 12, when I'm fast asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. All the stockings you will find hanging in a row. Mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know. Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled, Nellie wants a storybook, one she hasn't read. Now I think I'll leave to you what I give the rest. Choose for me, dear Santa Claus, you will know the best. Angels, we have heard on high, sweetly singing o'er the plains, and the mountains in reply, echoing their joyous strain.
You have been listening to Radio Superior 1943, a weekly production presented by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan is played by Paul Guggenheimer. Other performances by Don Mason, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1943 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior 1943. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.
We have news about the servicemen mentioned in tonight's program, courtesy of Ellen Oaks of the Douglas County Veterans Office.
Although we have no information on Army Air Corps Sergeant Lawrence Wolf, who was shot down over Austria, or George Zanozowski, the father of twins he had never seen, we were able to find out the other fathers who hadn't seen their children survive the war.
W.G. Joe Thompson was discharged in 1945, as was Ensign Charles Linder, also honorably discharged in 1945. And Private First Class Arthur Cirilli was also discharged to be reunited with his daughter Mary. Private Cirilli went on to practice law and become a longtime circuit judge in Douglas County.
Our thanks to the very talented Fair and Square kids, Becca Smith, Tyler Johnson, Victoria Johnson, Savannah Johnson, and Jenna Ilokainen. They help make all of our Christmases merry.